Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Thriving Adoptees podcast. So today I'm delighted to be joined by Brian Lynch. So Brian's the CEO of the Children's Community Programs of Connecticut. And Brian, I'm introducing you fully today because I've realized that, you know, I've been leaving it to the guests to introduce themselves. And I was listening back to myself and I thought, why do I keep on doing this? It's just habit. I need to, because I always chat to 99% of the time we have a guest like yourself on, I chat to them first. So I know exactly who they are. But I've left it to them to introduce something. I think, well, no, I should be doing that. You know, that's what proper podcast hosts do, right? They do their research, like I do my research, and then introduce
them.
So the thing about Brian that makes Brian really special, listeners, is that he's been in adoption for an awful long time, right? So 2 years after I was adopted, 2 years after I was adopted, I was adopted in 1967. 2 years after I was adopted, Brian did his first three adoptions in 1969. And he's just been telling me that his agency has done their first interstate adoption literally just before we started recording today. So we're talking from 1969 right up to the present day, and Brian's been in there in the field of adoption for that time. So I'm looking forward to him sharing some great pearls of wisdom that he's seen over that time, because that's 53 years. That's a scary.
I was only 12 years old when I started. Yes. Simon, so
he was just 12 years old, and the guy's a force of nature. He does not look his.
I was a child prodigy.
Normally, child prodigies are in chess, aren't they, or something like that? But this is an adoption child prodigy. So, right. Brian, thank you. Welcome to the show, my friend.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I feel it's a great honor, and I love the cross pond cultural exchange that we can do, and you know, to learn about what you folks have been doing in the United Kingdom and versus what we do here, and yet at the same time understand there's a universality to this whole issue of adoption. You know,
so true. The circumstances of every adoption are different. The procedures are different from country to country, and obviously within the United States, from state to state. You've been talking about some of the changes that you've been making in the state for these interstate adoptions to work within family groups and how that works. So the universality is we're talking about. Emotions here, aren't we? We're talking about emotions, we're talking about self-esteem, we're talking about resilience. We've all got a different voice in our heads, but underneath it all, our feelings are the same wherever we are in the world. So yeah, that's the universality for me, is that heart and the fact that people in this adoption space come to it from big hearts, like yourself, whether they're, you know, running a center and agency like yourself, or the adopted parents, the birth parents, everybody's coming at it from their heart. That must be the universality, I guess. I don't know. What's the universality for you, Brian?
You know, that I think looking at the adoption as a central issue and understanding that, you know, it is that regardless of when, where, how, who, you know, that adoption is when you experience that, you know, everybody who experiences that will have a range of feelings, will have a range of feelings and thoughts and ideas about it. From, you know, whether or not you were the adoptee, the birth parent, or the adoptive parent. So, you know, I think an adoptive parent in the UK could talk to a someone here in Connecticut, adoptive parent in Connecticut, and they'd be able to have a conversation about their feelings and thoughts about adoption. They may not be able to have that same conversation about world hunger. They may have different opinion about it, okay? But I do think when it comes to this central issue, pretty much anybody all over the world could have these conversations that we're having today.
Yeah. So the name of the podcast is Thriving Adoptees. What comes to your mind when you hear that phrase?
Well, first of all, I love it. Okay, I just think that is, you know, we have always, too much, I think, has been focused a little bit on the, I don't know if I want to call it the negative aspects or the problem aspects of adoptees and adoption and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, and I know, you know, from being in this business as long as I have, that, you know, so many people have been adopted and have been thrived and have grown and have, you know, that it isn't something because you are adopted that means you are going to be affected negatively for the rest of your life. Now, don't get me wrong, some people are, but that's not everybody. And I think, you know, thriving means strong and means resilient and means, you know, that, and those are good terms. Those are, you know, those are great ways to I think, describe adoptees.
Yeah.
So I love the name. I love the name.
Thank you.
We have support group. We have support groups here. I think I want to call one of them that name. I borrowed from your, you know.
You go for it. You go for it. Yeah. So far we've talked about really kind of like we've looked at adoptees and but perhaps because I've talked about the, you know, the adoption, your adoption, your center and focus on your work with adoptive parents. But I understand from our conversation last time that as you also have your own clinical practice. Is that how you term it? It's a clinical practice, yeah?
Yes.
So you're helping different people, including adoptees, find their strength and become more resilient and bounce back. And I'd love to focus in on that. If we start with that, Brian, that would be really great because we have an awful lot of episodes that are focused fairly and squarely on adopted parents. I'm trying to redress the balance and do more for the adoptees that listen to the show. So I want to ask you, I want to give you a really great broad question, right? So that you can share what you've learned. Because we're talking about since 1969, you're in adoption. When did you establish your clinical practice? Was that in the 70s or was that?
Yes, I think early, probably 1976, 77.
Okay, so that's a huge time as well. So what would you say were the main things that you have learned in that time with reference to adoptees thriving, being strong, being resilient? What is it that you've learned?
That's a great question, Simon. I guess I want to talk about it from a couple of perspectives. You know, I remember as a young graduate student, you know, the issue, I don't know if I learned a lot about adoption in graduate school. You know, we talked about it, but, you know, and we talked about the process of adoption and all that, but I don't know if I really ever got the kind of knowledge of what it was that, you know, results after the post-adoption and for years afterwards. So I think my best teachers that I learned everything from was adoptees that I've worked with And I will call it the privilege of having worked with them in a clinical situation, as well as the adoptive parents and birth parents. And so, you know, as and I also know that because, you know, and I think even to this day, you know, I don't think every clinician is as well versed or well knowledgeable of the issue of adoption. And, you know, I've worked with many adoptees who, you know, sought out private practice therapists, and, you know, the therapist didn't really consider that to be a central issue when I think it is. And so my training, both from having worked with lots of adopted children, adopted adults, birth parents, you know, and adoptive parents, you know, has taught me that I need to know a lot about that if I'm going to work with, you know, people who have gone through that. And many of the people who come to see me will either come to see me because they know that that's a central issue that's causing some of their problems that they want to talk to in therapy, or they come with the symptoms of that, those of that, of the being adopted, and I can help them make the correlation and the connection between a lot of the depression that you're experiencing, or a lot of anxiety, their feelings of rejection stem from the problems of, you know, some unresolved issues about the adoption. So that's what I've learned, is that, you know, my best teachers have been you guys, okay? And because nobody knows it better than you. And I think therapists need to listen to you guys, because you'll tell us what we really need to know and what really is the central issues for so many of, you know, adoptees, and both in terms of children and in terms of adults. So my practice is both. I deal with adoptive children, kids under 16, and I deal with also kids over eight, adults over 18. And you know, I see some of the same issues regardless of age, you know, which has been that, you know, big question mark in the sky, which is the why, you know, why was I adopted, you know? And it manifests itself in very, that question manifests itself in many different ways, depending on the age of the person. You know, my 12-year-old that I see who's adopted, who's been having a lot of school anxiety issues, you know, when we talk about the adoption, is that he can't understand what was wrong with me that my mom and dad decided to give me up. And they use that word, give me up, a lot. Kids do that word, give me up. And that's a hard feeling to think about, you know, being given up. And I don't know how that words ever got put together, but because there's in that word, there is a connotation of rejection, that I must not have been adequate, good enough, because I was given up, and it's almost like thrown away. And that plays into a lot of kids' heads and throughout their life, if they haven't, you know, been able to totally talk about that and address that. So I've learned that that's a very universal feeling among many adoptees about the rejection of having been given up.
Yes.
I learned a lot about that.
Love that. So from my own experience, that hadn't occurred to me, but some of those issues, those feelings, the sense of rejection and anxiety, and that, you know, what was wrong with me, they they hadn't really landed for me. But when they did land for me, it was almost like it was a snowball. So I talk about the trauma that I talk about trauma like a snowball. So that, you know, I got the snowball, like you scoop up some snow, you make it into a ball, and then you roll it along the ground, and you've got the base of a snowman or a snow person or a non-binary snow object, you know, depending on how you think. That's what seemed to me, and that's what occurred to me, that it the thought festered. So the thought festered, and you were saying, what's wrong with me, and given up, and you talked about it being a hard feeling. So it's almost as if there's the feeling of rejection, and then there's the feeling that feeling hardening and getting worse.
Mm-hmm.
So in a sense, like we're stewing in it. It's growing over time. You know, what we focus on gets, as we all know, what we focus on gets bigger. So it's almost as if it's about the adoption, but it's also about our feelings, the meaning that we give into adoption. So that's kind of my experience on it. Is that something that you would say was common, where the trauma grows as we stew on things?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And you know, there's a difference between the intellectual and the emotional. And, you know, intellectually, you know, when people find out they're adopted and they find out the circumstance of the adoptions, you know, it's always the story usually is that your mom or your dad was not able to take care of you, and for they loved you so much that they gave you to another family to take care of you, which is us, your adoptive parents. And, you know, that was a great act of sacrifice. And, you know, and that's the intellectual story that weren't your parents really so good to you to know they couldn't take care of you since they wanted someone else who could take care of you better. And that's the intellectual, okay? The emotional, on the other hand, and that I think most kids and feel who are adopted, is there any good reason for why a parent should give up a child? You know, that's the emotional piece, that no matter what, no matter how bad the circumstances were, how old they were, how poor they were, how whatever the circumstances, is there ever a good reason that is?
Yeah.
And that's the emotional stuff. That's not the intellectual stuff. And there is where, whether that emotional stuff comes later in your life or it comes earlier in your life, that's what it comes to. Okay, I know my story that my parents put me up for adoption because they thought it was I'd have a better life. But is that really true? Is there really a good reason?
And a lot of adoptees rail against that. They rail against that. So they get very intellectually they're arguing against that. So how could that be? You know, what reason could there be? How could it be that bad? And then maybe, you know, especially if they've had a negative adoption experience, then that all kind of conflates together. That all joins in together, and then they get very annoyed about people telling them that they should be grateful.
Yeah,
and that adds on more stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So then they hear up all this negative. Then they hear all this negative side that you've talked about. So all these things add on different layers, and then you can either add a layer of complexity. So you know, often we have I've had quite a few interracial adoptees on the podcast, and that seems to add another layer of complexity, because you know they don't look like their parents, or they get treated differently. The parents don't treat them differently because they love them. They don't see the color in them, but then they go out into the world and the world does treat them differently, and that adds to the complexity. And so the trauma and the drama and the whole shebang just gets worse and worse, because they go into a group and they go into an adoptee Facebook group and everybody else is, it's like an echo chamber, and all this negative, all this negativity and grows inside them. That's what it seems to be like to me. So that's just my, I've been adopted 55 years ago. I've been studying its impact, you know, and how our feelings work and all that stuff for maybe 15 years. And I've been in the adoption space maybe 15 months professionally. That's kind of my summation of it. How would you, to what extent would you see that as accurate? Is there something that I'm missing here? Because I'm trying to sum it up, given we're talking about the universality.
I think you got it right on, Simon. I think you're absolutely right. Yeah.
So how do we unpick this?
You know, and that's, I don't know if there's a general answer to that question. I almost think it's a very much on an individual person by person basis, you know, that conflict between what the intellectual and the emotional is somehow resolving that conflict, and that you know, my work always is, and I think I have never not done this with the hundreds and hundreds of adoptees that I've worked with, is it wasn't your fault. You didn't get adopted because you were a bad kid. This, you did not ask to be born. You didn't ask to have come into this world. And the fact that whatever the circumstances were, this was not because of you. And I don't think there's ever been any adoptee I've ever worked with that I didn't have to have that conversation. And if they can really conceptualize that this isn't my fault, okay? I didn't do something wrong. I wasn't a bad kid. I wasn't born bad, you know, that caused my parents. But that's, I think, on the emotional level, until you can really conceptualize that, is what you feel. That if someone gives something up, it's usually because that something is bad. And in adoption, that's not the case.
Yeah.
Little babies are never bad.
Yeah.
Okay. And there seems to be, when I'm able to have those conversations with many of the adoptees, it's very relieving to know that it wasn't my fault.
Okay. So as this stuff is, this stuff fascinates me, right? So what I want to do is explain why we can't do this on a podcast, right? Because what you're talking about is you're having a conversation with an adoptee, and you're using your skills and your experience. You're using experience to have a conversation with the adoptee to help them see that there's nothing wrong with them, mm-hmm. and it's not their fault. And that happens within the conversation. So, because what we're doing is we're having an intellectual conversation about the therapy conversation.
Yes.
So if you're getting frustrated, listeners, it's because the magic is in what Brian does with his mm-hmm. clients, right? So I'm going to give you, that being said, I'm going to give you the metaphor, and I have used this before, not so much, it's not bad, to help you understand this. Well, first thing is you could get in touch with Brian. His details are going to be in the show notes, so that's something like. What actually Brian's doing, if you take my snowball trauma metaphor, what Brian's doing is he's bringing stuff from out of you, out of us, in conversation, and it's like he's taking a fan heater, an industrial heater, to the snowball of your trauma, in which and as he brings the stuff up to the surface and powers the heat on onto this trauma that's made like a snowball, then the snowball melts and it shrinks in size and it becomes less and less of an issue. That would seem to me to be what's going on.
I think you're right. Yep, that's what we're trying to do, is melt the trauma to realize that the decisions that were made about you at that stage of your life, were made by other people in seemingly what they thought was in your best interest, but you had no say in that, okay? And that never was that because you were a bad kid, and I deal with foster children a lot. And our foster children, that's their attachment issues are because they were given, they're bad kids and they get placed 9 different times by the time they're abused by their biological parents and they get taken away and they were placed in 9 different homes and they're bad kids. I mean, that's what they feel. That's not the same thing as being adopted as a baby. And babies aren't bad. That's what
I've been
talking about.
So I'd like to share a couple of examples there just to bring that home. So the first one is the easy one with me, okay? So I, when I got my records, and I know getting records is different country to country, state to state. When I got my records, it was clear to me that the letters from my birth mother to the adoption organization, the council, the authority, it's a charity in Liverpool where I was adopted from. She did that before I was born, right? So she didn't give birth to me, look at me and say, no, I don't want this one. The plan was made before. So if the plan was made before I was born, it had nothing to do with me or the fact that, I've got brown hair. or right, whatever. Yeah. It was nothing. It was there was no rejection. So that's the simple one. So if you're adopted chances are, you know, if you were adopted as an infant, then the plan was in place before you came along. So how could it have anything to do with you? It couldn't have anything to do with you because you weren't on the planet as a separate individual. You were still in your birth mother.
That's right.
That's the first one. The second one, the trickier one, right, is this adopted out of care one. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because my mentor, Elizabeth Ivory, and I mention her name because she has a book and it's called It's Not Your Fault, right? And it's got nothing to do with adoption. It's got to do with the fact it's not your fault that you're feeling the way that you're doing, because you're not choosing your feelings. And most of us aren't choosing how we feel most of the time. So, but she wanted to be adopted because she was abused by her father. And she took on that, you know, what was wrong with me? And that stayed with her for years. And as a teen, it manifested into bulimia. And then she got into personal development and she had some breakthroughs. And now she inspires others, like she's inspiring for me. And I bring her up because if she can get through that, my life's been a cakewalk, right? Her life was a living nightmare with the abuse of her father. If she can get through that, anybody can get through anything. And the reason I bring that up is if listener, if you're struggling, whatever the background to it, the message of the Thriving Adoptees podcast is there's always hope, because this woman that mentored me and does me went through all that. So this is all for me that one of the challenges in the adoption space is, as you related to, this negative narrative, focus on the negative. And I think that's part of the human condition. We all focus on the negative. It's never about what we've got. It's always about what we want. It's never about what's going right. It's always about what's going wrong. It seems to be kind of human nature. But you've seen some darkness, but you've helped these guys out of these adoptees out of the darkness into the light of the hope. What's helped them see that light?
And that's why I love your name, Thriving, because I've helped people overcome the darkness to become who became thriving adoptees. That it was, you know, instead of letting the trauma overtake them, and you know, they were able to work through, you know, all the emotions and feelings that we've been just talking about, and you know, kind of forgive themselves for feeling, you know, that I was that bad kid. Well, I'm relieved of that now. I don't, you know, I've been validated. I'm not the bad kid that got thrown away. I'm a good kid. And, you know, I'm strong and I'm capable and I can let go of that now. I don't have to carry that around with me any longer, that I was the bad kid that was thrown away. And, you know, that getting validated for that and is wonderful. I mean, it's relieved. It lets go so much. And I've seen that happen so many times. And once that's discarded, life gets so much better. You're able to accept love and acceptance from other people. You're able to love and accept other people. You're being able to believe in yourself. You're being able to see that, you know, I am really a good person. And unfortunately, the circumstances that of my birth, you know, the people who made that decision or not to make that decision to bring me in the world, that was really on them, not on me. And I have to let go of that after I've resolved it and been, you know, gone from guilt and anger and everything else in between. And I want everybody to know that there is hopefulness and life after that, you know. But I think that's one of the core issues, is shedding the responsibility that I am responsible for having been given up for adoption.
Okay. So you mentioned a key word there. And the key word was validation, right? So I'm going to draw a distinction between validating the story in our head, right? And by our, I mean adoptees, validating the story in our head rather than as different to validating our intrinsic worth. Because to me, those things seem very different. And they seem different to me, but can you guess where I'm going with this? Because there's a subtle distinction there. And I've just got the feeling I've been talking too much. So I feel like I've asked you that.
I'd like to hear more. Explain what you think of me.
You see what Brian just did then, right? This is smart, right? He asked me for more. He asked me for more information into what I'm talking about here. So what I see in adoptive Facebook groups is let me put this differently. What I've done myself is I have validated my story. You know, what the thinker thinks, the prover proves. So I have looked for example, I've looked for evidence that I am not good enough. Right? That's my mind. My mind has been kind of tuned into that. So so that's one thing. Second thing is I see a lot of people validating the pain of others. And so they're validating the darkness, and that turns the darkness down. It gets darker and darker and darker. The trauma snowball gets bigger and bigger and bigger. Whereas what we're talking about here is validating adoptees' self-worth. So on one hand, validating a story, share your story. So for me, there was a work of fiction going on in my head, the story that I wasn't good enough. And people will validate that story. And if you validate it, it gets worse. It's like, instead of it being a little pamphlet with 6 pages, the reasons that I'm not good enough, it becomes a huge book that's like 6 inches thick. It's got 500 pages. That's the validation of a story compared to the validation of adoptees' essential self-worth and goodness.
What you believe to be true, oftentimes you make true. And yet what you believe to be true may not be true.
Indeed.
Okay.
Indeed.
And that's what you just said, you know.
Yeah.
If you believe that, you know, you were bad, you're going to validate that by all kinds of finding ways and examples to do that. Okay. Whereas if you change the belief of I'm not bad, you know, I'm not damaged, I'm not scarred because I was given up for adoption, you know, then you make that come true and you seek out the truth of, yeah, I'm really a kind person. Yes, I do care about people. Yes, I've achieved certain things. I have. And so it's which truth you believe something be true, then you can prove it to be true.
Yes. So there's a term for this that somebody mentioned to me about 12 months ago, and the term is confirmation bias. Confirmation bias. So this isn't, we're not just talking stuff that Brian's made up or Simon's made up or we've made up together. This confirmation bias is a thing. So what we believe until we believe differently.
Different, sure.
So what we're trying to do with the with this episode of the podcast and with all the episodes of the podcast is we're trying to catalyze a change in the listener's belief. So what helps beliefs change, Brian?
Again, I think, you know, what I was saying in a lot of the work that I do with adoptees is starting at the beginning and being able to say, this wasn't my fault. I didn't do something wrong to cause me to be adopted. So that's the beginning of that.
And then you're going straight back. You're going to the very start of the story.
Right to that moment of decision that the people have made, that that decision was made for you, not about you. Okay. And then we go from there. Okay. And then we really start to try to change the scenario to that reads, you know, I was a, must have been a bad kid and therefore I was given up for adoption. So, you know, when I wasn't toilet trained at the same time, at the right time, and my parents said, oh, you know, it took him that long, and when he didn't go to school well, and when he did, all the things that anybody, any child, whether adopted or not, will go through, you know, I think adoptees tend to attribute anything wrong to that being it, that they're adopted. And I say, for most of us, what's wrong in our lives, because we're, it's the human condition. I mean, I call this thing the human condition. We all have. We all make mistakes. We all do stupid things. That shit happens to all of us, you know. But, you know, that's the human condition. It's not because we're adopted. And if you can go back and say, well, I was adopted, but it wasn't my fault. It doesn't scar me. I don't have a scarlet letter on me anymore. It changes a whole way of looking at it. And instead of looking at your mistakes or what you did wrong or what you didn't write, it's not because you were adopted, it's because you have the human condition that we all have.
Yeah.
And that's the beginning, I think, Simon, of so changing the story.
So I love this because I think as human beings, we try to find pegs to hang stuff on. And we attribute stuff or attribute. I'm not sure how you're supposed to pronounce that word. I always say that we adoptees often hang the tail on the wrong donkey. So we blame. Let me make it personal so I'm not upsetting or criticizing any listeners, right? I blame it. I blame stuff on being adoption sometimes. Interestingly, I don't blame a lot on it. I tend to blame stuff on business and business skills. That's my particular peccadillo. Do you use that word in the States? Peccadillo? A peccadillo. It's like... I don't know what a peccadillo is. It's a trait. It's like a trait. It's like a posh English. It's just, maybe it's a quirky English word for a trait or a habit. A peccadillo. What's your peccadillo? My peccadillo is that I blame stuff on adoption, or I drink my tea wrong. You know, I've got to say. We blame, so we look at something, to use your words, that is due to the human condition. And we, instead of saying that's human, we say that's adoption. We misattribute, we oversimplify, our minds are meaning makers, meaning seekers. We are looking for a reason why. We want to know why. Like we want to know why we were adopted. You know? And so we jump to an assumption on that. Why was I adopted? I was a bad kid. There was something wrong with me. I wasn't good enough. My birth mother didn't love me. And we jump to all these conclusions. And therefore, some people validate our the voice in our head tends to validate itself.
Mm-hmm.
And if we hang around with people that validate the voice in our head, it's just going to get louder. It's going to squawk louder. Whereas if you go and see somebody like Brian, they're going to empathize with you. And hopefully they're going to help you see a truer truth.
See, I think why I believe this so strongly, in some ways, Simon, is because, you know, when I said to you earlier today, you know, that for most adoptees, there is this belief, there is no good reason. They keep trying to figure out a reason for why they were placed for adoption. And since there never comes up with one that seems to be on an emotional level, you know, acceptable, then they blame themselves. So if I can't come up with one reason to why a parent should give a child up for adoption, it therefore must lay on the hands of the child, not on the parent. And that's where the beginning of the thinking starts to move in that direction. Second of all, the two most difficult emotions that particularly anybody can experience is abandonment and rejection. And those are the two emotions that the quote giving up feeling is conjures in us, that we have been abandoned and we have been rejected. So what that by giving up, which is an abandonment, we feel this the core of the deepest kind of rejection that one human being can feel, that the people who gave birth to you, gave you up, abandoned you, and rejected you. And I think that's the scenario that many adopted people spend their whole life proving to be true. And I try to change that belief system from no, you know, you weren't given up because of you, you were given up because of them. Yes, you were abandoned, but it wasn't because you were a bad kid. And yes, you do feel rejection because of that, but that doesn't mean every person in your life is going to reject you, or everybody who you love or could love you will leave you. And that's the story that gets created because of, as you were saying, the scenario that gets built, snowball going downhill, that my mother did that to me, so my best friend in kindergarten did that to me, and they left me, and then my girlfriend left me, and then my wife and my husband, and it just continues to grow and grow and grow.
Yeah.
My voice tries to change that.
Yeah.
That's where I decided to talk.
So what you're helping the adoptee do is see the story as fiction.
Yes.
A fact.
Absolutely. Well said. It's a fictional story created by a myth.
And it's a myth. Interesting. I read a book called The E-Myth. That's a business book. Anyway, that's by the by. So to what extent do people hang on to that story?
Well, that's why I love working with kids. You know, I love working with children because they're easier to rewire at 12 than at 42. Okay. So, you know, children, the sooner you can begin the rewiring process of changing the belief system, the better off. Okay. But that's not to say that you can't do that ever. I mean, you know, I've seen people I've worked with in their 60s and 70s get help rewiring the basic belief system that it was my fault and therefore everything else from here on in my life will be my fault, you know, to it wasn't my fault, you know. And you know, that sounds very simplistic, but it's really not, you know, because blame and shame and guilt are horrible emotions that all of us live with. And if that's how we feel about ourselves because of that act, you realize the profound consequences that's going to have with us, shame and guilt and blame. Well, when you can be relieved of that and place it to maybe where it belongs, because now when you talk to biological parents, they feel the same feelings of blame and guilt and shame. Okay. When you talk to adoptive parents, because they have some of those same feelings because they weren't able to have children of their biological own children. So they feel guilt and shame and blame on that. So, you know, the interesting in the adoptive triangle, everybody's feeling some of the same exact emotions for similar reasons. Wow. And yet the adoptee, it's because of it was my fault.
Yeah. I've never had this particular thought or even come up with this word before, but I just wanted to run it past you. Because to me it has a lot more hope, right? So you've been talking, you talked to, and I've done a lot of work with kids as well. So I completely get it, because mm-hmm. I've done a lot of work with kids, but I've worked alongside a lot of adults. Do you know what I mean? I've seen how hard it is. I've seen how hard change is for me sometimes, and I've seen how hard change is for other adults, and I've seen how fast it happens for kids. And by easy and hard, I am actually only talking about time, really. It's probably a better word to use would be the speed rather than the ease. So culturally, I think that we are sold a myth, or we are told a myth, that change is hard, right? And change takes time. And you talked about rewiring, and the thought that popped into my head with my own stuff about adoption and my own sense of abandonment or not being good enough from my birth mother not listening to me, I'd actually use the word dewiring rather than rewiring, because I've never it happened in two phases. I can see this really clearly now. The first thing that happened is it was dewired. So I said to the lady that I was talking to, my birth mother didn't love me enough to keep me. She just gave me this consolation prize as a teddy bear. And then the woman I was talking to said, gently, I don't think it was like that, Simon. And that dewired it. It basically took the legs from under the argument that was going on in my head. It made the work of fiction in my head. It questioned the work of fiction in my head, and that dewired it. Then 8 years later on, when I got my, or I think it was something like that, I got my adoption file, and I saw the care and that had gone in, you know, the care and thought that had gone into planning my adoption before I was born, and this desire for my birth mother to give me this teddy bear. That's when the rewiring happened, when it was rewired, and I saw that my birth mother did love me. So it's two stages there, dewiring and rewiring.
That's true. Yeah, I think that's very true. I think that the first dewiring is confronting what the truth is, you know, in your adoption, is the reason for why you were adopted. And the rewiring is, after you do that, you know, what's your new belief now? What is your new belief, and how are you going to live your life based on that new belief? And I think you made a good point, Simon. It's a two-step, not one-step process. Before you can rewire, you have to dewire.
Yeah, and the dewiring, and the reason I'm going on about this is the dewiring was instantaneous.
Yeah, yeah.
So the dewiring is seeing through the lie, and the rewiring, that was pretty instantaneous as well, but it happened 8 years. Like, change happens quick when it may take a long time for change to happen, but when it happens quickly. It's like the bus. I always use this analogy of the bus stop. So the bus may be late and it might take ages and ages to arrive, but it always takes 10 yards to travel. Sorry, it always takes 1 second to travel the last 10 yards. When it comes around the corner, it happens. So the dewiring is seeing through the lie, and the rewiring is seeing the truth.
Yes, yeah. And, you know, that dewiring, see, you had the belief that she didn't love me enough, and that's why she gave me the option. The other part could be, I wasn't lovable enough, and therefore... That's why she gave me up for adoption. Both of those are lies, okay?
Yeah.
You know, that neither one are true. But I think it falls into one of those two categories. Because what else could it be? What else? Either she didn't love me enough, or I was unlovable. So it ought to be one of those two.
So my angry lie, I turned it on her. And what you're saying is some adoptees, instead of turning it on the birth mother, they turn it on themselves.
You bet. And that's that it's not her fault, it's my fault. And watch, I'll prove that through the rest of my life.
Right.
Okay. I'll prove that through the rest of my life. And that's where we get to, you know, hopefully into therapy, and we can redo that. That neither one of those are true. I know that, you know, I am totally convinced that, you know, no baby is a bad baby, comes into this world a bad baby, and therefore gets given up. I want to believe that in 99.9% of the cases, it wasn't, you didn't love me enough. That's why I gave you up, and that's why. But it's one of the two, you know, either one. It's never anything other than that, I don't believe, you know. And I think once we can unhook from either one of those belief systems, life can be very different. As you are an example of, Simon.
Wow. So I'm conscious of time, and I love your I just love this conversation. I love the clarity and the simplicity that you've brought to it. I think that sometimes I've gone on a bit, and I haven't been able to simplify it, but you've been able to kind of like draw us back and just absolutely nail it on clarity here. And I think it's been a great conversation of it.
Well, I hope over all these years I've learned something about this issue, and and the kids and the adults that I've had the opportunity, and as I say, the privilege to work with, have taught me so much. You know, I also, on a personal level, you know, had a father-in-law who was, he was an indentured servant, and truly one of those people who were left in a basket on the steps of the New York Foundling home, and never found out. He always thought he was adopted until he turned 18, and his parents at that said, no, you're an indentured servant, and you know, you were never legally adopted. There was not an adoption back then. So I've had a real personal experience with my father-in-law and helping him over the years to come to terms with, you know, what that was like, that real severe rejection, and then trying to help him to get information about it. And at that point, New York records were closed, and he died never being able to know that,
yeah,
you know, had a sister and a number of things. So it's been a very personal journey for me, and, you know, as well as really understanding, you know, I've had a great, you know, experience work. I mean, working with adoptees have been some of the best work, most favorite work I've ever done. Yeah. And still do. Yeah. So that's why I love coming on your podcast, because the thriving part of that, I've always believed, I've always, you know, so many adoptees have come to me with in despair and hopelessness that it will never be better. And I've shown them it can be. And things like this does show on a very broad scale, you know, this is not a curse. This is not a life sentence. This can be just a description of the color of your eyes or the color of your skin or your hair color. I've also been adopted.
Yeah, that's great. So I'm going to put links in the show notes to Brian's center and his links to his social channels. So I'd encourage you, if you're looking for some help in this area, then do get in touch with them. And thank you very much, Brian. It's been a delight.
It's been a pleasure talking to you, and I hope that any of your listeners, you know, feel free to contact me or whatever, our agency, and we hopefully can keep this dialogue going. I would like this not to be our last conversation.
Yeah.
Just one of many.
Yeah. Brilliant.
Thank you so
much.
Looking
forward to having you back on the show. Thanks, Brian. Thank you.
Thank you. Take care now.
See you soon. Bye-bye.